afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, October 17th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
I'm surprised that doesn't have some sort of connotation as far as October 17th, 2017. I don't know. But anyway, how are you today, Al?
I can't complain too much.
I just wanted to tell the
listeners. If we have time, I suppose I could do some complaining, though, maybe later in the program.
Sure. I'm sure you will find something to make comments about. Let's go ahead and get to the market prices today. A little, once again, pressure on gold. That means dollar must be stronger. You have gold down $8.90. $1,286. You have silver down 20 cents today at $1,711. Platinum was stronger today by three at $938. And palladium was stronger. Platinum was stronger by three at $938. Palladium was stronger by eight at $981. The USDX today was trading stronger.
Did you notice rhodium?
It's up $60.
$60.
You know what? I was kind of doing some research on that this morning, and what I think it comes back, because really the last moves in rhodium came pretty much after they reversed those EPA regulations last week. So when the decision to scrap the Clean Power Plan may have reduced pressure to lower carbon emissions. So it's funny how that started to get stronger after that was done, and I was trying to do some research on it to see how rhodium is used and why that would have an impact. But I was also reading where they were thinking about taking one of these metals out. You know, it has something to do with the coal plants, but I haven't gotten there yet, and I haven't found my answers that I was looking for. But I do think there was a connection there. And
well, I don't know what the connection is, but $60 change in the price of a metal, precious
we'll
metal
see.
Or whatever.
Well, there has to be a reason why it's going up. It's just not turning around for it to go up. So I was trying to find the connection for both palladium and rhodium, and I think that is the connection. And I was also reading where they were taking the restrictions off one of these metals to where they would no longer trade freely in the free market, and therefore this could be all a lot of paper trading, so future contracts and so forth. So anyway, I'm doing that research right now, and once I make that connection, then I can let everybody know. And it's just interesting. It's rhodium. And so we have the USDX today stronger by 0.25 at 93.51. Crude oil was up 10 cents at 51.97. And the paper markets today, little change in the Dow. 40 points, 22,996. The NASDAQ basically unchanged, 66.23. And the S&P up 2 points, 2,559. Just get used to the Dow closing over 23,000. And we'll see where it goes from there. But 10-year yield, 2.30%, down 0.01. And pressure on the euro, 118. Down 0.23. So today, Gary Cohen, Al and I were talking about this prior to the program. Mr. Cohen, who is President Trump's top economic advisor, he was in Chicago yesterday, and he thinks that the clearinghouses, The 2010 Dodd-Frank law attempted to minimize the danger of exotic derivatives, like the ones the insurance company AIG sold. Dodd-Frank required most of these trades move from opaque over-the-counter markets to more transparent exchanges known as clearinghouses. Now, these third parties act as a middleman that guarantee payment, even if one of the trading partners fails, like AIG. While Dodd-Frank is credited with making derivatives safer, some worry about what happens to the financial system if the clearinghouses themselves implode. And this is what Gary Cohen, President Trump's top economic advisor, said in Chicago yesterday. He says, We haven't figured out yet how to resolve a clearinghouse. Cohen told financial executives at this convention it seems obvious to him that's what's going to be the next problem. Over the weekend, Cohen called the issue a new systemic problem. Today, clearinghouses are vital parts of the financial plumbing where trillions of dollars of future contracts and commodity transactions get done. These third parties are responsible for safely overseeing trades, monitoring them, and making sure they get settled safely. And this is what I've always said and I've said this story 1,000 times, when I traded commodities, when I traded contracts, options, the whole point is you could be making $1 million and never get your money. And this was the part that's going to fail. These clearing houses aren't going to have the funds.
And how much money are they backing up right now? How much money are they insuring right now?
Cohen estimates that $278 trillion of interest rate derivatives go through these clearing houses. He says these are staggering numbers. He added that we have fallen in love with clearinghouses, and they seem to be the cure for all ills.
Well, what it sounds like to me is that these clearinghouses are essentially guaranteeing a bunch of transactions.
To the tune of $278 trillion.
They can't possibly. What they're doing, they have to be doing this from, they have to know. The people that are running these clearinghouses have to know this thing's all going to blow up. But I'm going to get out with my corporate jet and my mansion and the rest of that, the heck with the rest of them. I mean, they have to know this can't work in a worst case. And if it ever is needed, it's going to blow up in everybody's face. And they're selling insurance. It's like, I could start an insurance company, Melody.
Yeah.
And I just won't keep any money to actually pay people.
Yeah.
Just collect policies and collect, payments and never keep anything in case they actually is a demand for payments.
Now, this is the top economic advisor to President Trump. Basically coming out and saying, this is systemic. This is, the next collapse.
What does he mean when he says it's systemic?
It's over.
He means the whole system is in jeopardy. That's what he means.
Yes.
He means the whole system is jeopardized. That might not be what he means, but I believe that's what it amounts to. The whole system's in jeopardy. If this thing goes south, I mean, I can't even imagine how that would shake out. It's just bizarre. It's like me guaranteeing to pay everybody who listens to this program $1 billion in gold. It isn't going to happen. I can guarantee to do it. You can all, buy sell premiums or whatever. I don't have $1 billion worth of gold for one of you, let alone,
thousands.
Thousands of you.
Thousands. And we have to remember that during the financial collapse, AIG, the insurance company, they were rescued with $180 billion, and everything was falling apart at that point in time for $180 billion. Well, how about $278 trillion?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, these numbers are just like, and yet gold's down.
Because nobody really understands what's happening here. Very few people see the potential danger, and everybody thinks it's just running along just fine, but it's being supported, I'm guessing. But it appears to me that the system is being supported by $280 trillion in derivatives. Mm-hmm. That's just insane. The emperor is nude, folks. That's the implication if this goes south, and it's bound to sooner or later. I don't know when, but when it does, the whole thing goes down the pipe. The system is supported by an illusion, $280 trillion worth of derivatives. I don't know.
Well, you know, and, you know, he's suggesting that the regulators come up with a plan to safely unwind these clearinghouses. Dodd-Frank required big banks like J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo provide regulators with resolution plans or living wills that describe an institution's strategy in case they file for bankruptcy.
The institution's strategy should be to provide airline tickets to all of their top executives to countries that don't have extradition treaties with the United States. That should be their strategy for unwinding this thing, because there is no way. What are they going to do? If this thing goes south, who's going to come up with $280 trillion to make good on it? Nobody. There's no one around. Nobody's got that money. We don't have it. China doesn't have it. The world doesn't have it. I think the, what is it, $60 trillion global?
Yes.
It's four times the global gross domestic product for a year.
Cohen says that we don't have a resolution plan for clearinghouses, but we keep putting more and more things in clearinghouses.
I know.
Yeah.
What this is they have created an alternative institution that can create an illusion of trust for the American people or the people who buy derivatives. I won't even say the American people, but ultimately it's all under control. You know, we've got it all under control. No, you don't. This is fraud. This is massive, massive fraud. They're looking for a way to unwind it. I'll tell you how to unwind it. Everybody who's participated in advocating these things that cannot possibly be paid in full should be simply jailed. Right? Charge them with fraud and lock them up for 5 or 10. It won't make a financial difference now, but it might scare the next generation into thinking, you know, maybe we shouldn't engage in this kind of fraud. If we do, maybe we're going to spend 5 or 10 years in a slammer.
And you know, and Cohen himself knows what's going on. I mean, he's the one that led Goldman Sachs in the pre-crisis betting against the housing market that became known as the Big Short. Goldman Sachs made $12 billion in 2007 as all the other banks were stumbling. Cohen himself hauled in $72 million that year, so he knows what he's talking about. And so, but what's irritating...
He knows a lot of what he's talking about.
But
I would bet you that even Cohen may not have had... He says there's $280 trillion worth of these derivatives right now. I'll bet he didn't know that until recently. Even though he may have had some inkling, he might have bought some, he might have sold some, he might have... I wonder how many people really understood the size of this market, and I wonder if they understand even now. Are we sure that he is correct, that it's only $280 trillion?
Well, we don't know, but
no,
we know they never give us the truth. But there's something else that's kind of Dodd-Frank allows these regulators to designate clearinghouses as systemically important institutions, a move that gives them access to emergency funding from the Federal Reserve. So when things do come undone, and maybe this is where Cohen is coming from, because we're going to be replacing Janet Yellen next year, and he at one time was perhaps one that would replace her and head of the Federal Reserve. So maybe, I don't know, but the thing of it is they can get emergency funding from the Federal Reserve, these clearinghouses. So, but how much can they get from the Federal Reserve?
They can't get $280 trillion.
They can't get that.
I don't know what they can get, but you know.
So
now, this is another one of the reasons why we do this program. It's another one of the reasons why we tell you, folks in the audience, you know, you are taking significant risk if you're trusting in this paper digital system. This thing's got to go down. I can't tell you when, but it's got to go down. This isn't going to get better. They're not going to get out of this. $270, $80 trillion, whatever they've got in derivatives, what are they going to do? I mean, this is going to explode sooner or later. It just about has to. And it's part of the reason we talk about buy low and sell high. We are at a moment when the price of gold is down and the stocks are at record highs. It is a perfect opportunity to capture, to take advantage of the buy low, sell high strategy, which means, for most people, it means you buy a particular item when it's low and you sell it when it's high. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking at, I'm saying, look, why not you're going to sell high. Okay, stocks are at record highs. It's got to be close to that time to sell. And gold is at relative lows, time to buy. Why not sell stocks and take the cash and put it into gold? And I know we're selling this on the program and the rest of it, but why not? Where is the reason, the rationale, where you can sit back and go, oh, that's a dumb idea. I don't want to get rid of my stocks just to buy gold. Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
And this just isn't, you know, something where the stock markets are going to go down by 5,000 points. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is wiping the whole world out. And but what's interesting here, and I know we're going to be going to a break soon, but there was a professor out of the University of Pennsylvania Law School, David Skeel. He wrote a paper on this back in June about the failure of a major clearinghouse could paralyze large swaths of the financial market. But at the bottom of this article, he says that this may be the single greatest weakness of the new financial architecture.
Yep.
And I found those words interesting because, you know, here we talk about, you know, this is new, we haven't been here before.
Yeah.
And how this new financial architecture took hold after the Great Recession of 2008. And they've created this new financial, and I'm not quite sure if they even named it yet or whether it will actually be identified as a new structure of finance after the recession, you know. And so he's confirming that we are in uncharted waters.
We are in a debt-based monetary system, a debt-based financial system, and the whole thing is going to go up in smoke unless they can manage to maintain public confidence in it. And even then, it's going to go up in smoke. Reality will intrude, but for the moment, I would guess that the clearinghouses you've been describing are an essential ingredient to shore up public confidence. Oh, yeah, we have plenty of money because we have a clearinghouse to back up these debt instruments. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh,
I mean, the whole
insured
thing is just yeah, right. Well, we're insured, you know. Yeah. But
yeah,
the FDIC, this is as good as the FDIC, understand? They've got a penny for every $100,000 in debt that they might have to cover. The whole thing is nuts. And, you know,
it
look at
crazy.
It and you just say, look, if you're sensible, it's not an unreasonable idea that you get out from under the dangers posed by this fiat currency, digital paper, get away from it, get into something tangible, protect yourself, protect your wealth. We're going to take a commercial break for a couple of announcements, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, we were just going to continue to talk a little bit more about the economy, and there was an S&P 500 comment. I can't really find it. Here we go. Even from the street, the S&P 500 has now blown by most optimistic Wall Street predictions. The S&P 500 has surpassed 18 predictions that analysts put forth in January for the end of the year. This is
none of them. They took a survey of 18 economists. Some says, well, it'll be here. Somebody says, I think it'll be a little higher, a little higher, a little higher. None of them anticipated.
Yeah.
Where the Standard & Poor's is right now.
So, right. Yeah. And so, again, and we got to remember, the election night, you know, the market dropped 1,000 points, and then it made a miraculous recovery in seconds. You know, it wasn't seconds, but it did come back, and it hasn't stopped since. And, again, it's based on infrastructure. There's not going to be any infrastructure spending. Tax reform. Maybe they'll get something passed this year. I mean, you can see everybody kissing up to everyone with a press conference yesterday between Mr. Trump and McConnell. And I get what Trump's doing. He needs McConnell to get the tax plan cut. But on the other hand, they're in there making, you know, kissy-kissy to one another that, you know, they're best friends, you know, for life. And if that's what you have to do, Brett Hume came out and says, well, now that's how politicians should act. And, of course, he was, you know, the reference of saying that Donald Trump was finally acting like a politician was his. So, you know, that's we'll see what happens to the tax reform, the tax cuts. But just remember when Reagan did his major tax reform and tax cuts, his debt was up 130% for his term. And after a couple years of, you know, economic growth due to his tax cuts, the country went into a recession, and we never really come out of that one. And so, and that's when really all the debt, you know, really began to add up. So, you know, we'll see, but this isn't, I didn't want to talk about taxes today. And, but there's all kinds of predictions. People are coming out everywhere. Duffy,
CME
chairman, gold, silver, gold, $5,000 should be trading today. Everybody knows, except the people. Yeah, it's mind-boggling.
The Standard & Poor's article has blown away most optimistic Wall Street predictions. 18 people predicted where it was going to be. 18 economists, recognized economists and whatever, predicted at the beginning of the year, 10 months ago, basically. They predicted, and no one anticipated it would be as high as it is right now. What does that tell you? To me, it implies that we may be, again, at that sell-high moment. We have the markets at record highs. If you've got your wealth is being stored to any significant degree in the Standard & Poor's 500, what is most likely? That it will continue to go up another 500 points, or that it's going to see a severe correction? What's more likely? I can't give you prophecy, but I mean, it doesn't take but just record highs. That probably indicates there's a high probability that it's going to go down. It's more likely to go down than it is to go up for any length of time. And if it's true again, buy low, sell high.
Now is an opportunity to sell high if you're in the paper markets.
It's just a matter of...
Take the money and buy low. Buy some gold.
It's just a matter of selling high. I mean, that's absolutely correct. I mean, it's dangerous to be in there, even to speculate.
I mean. Sell it now. It's at the high
sell
point.
Sell it now. I mean, my gosh, how much higher can it go? There's so little upside potential compared to gold. It's all downside to these markets. And
yeah, that's the thing. It's all downside.
The
problem is, if you want
to
keep riding it, if you want to keep riding that wave upward, and it might go up, who knows for how long. It might go up for several more months. I don't know how long it's going to go up, but you're certainly taking a risk, all right? You recognize that, and if it turns, if the market does turn, who is quick enough to get out? The truth is, this thing is being run by computers right now. And if the market turns the other way for whatever reason, if we have a significant correction, it's going to happen. It's going to probably happen. I can't tell you what will happen for absolute fact, but it will probably happen so quickly that you're not going to be able to get out. It could happen in minutes. This isn't a situation where you'll see, the market is down today. I think I'll call my broker tomorrow morning and tell him to sell. No, it'll be too late tomorrow morning. It'll probably be too late half hour from now. And I don't know how many calls your broker can take, but in a half hour, but...
They won't answer phones.
Dangerous. It's dangerous. You're up at close. We talked about this. I don't even remember which one of the billionaire investors asked him why. How did you become a billionaire? And he said, "I always sold too soon." Which means what? He did not try when something was coming up and it was getting close to the top. We didn't know where the top was, but he sold and got out while the getting was good, and he preserved his profit rather than try to get to the very peak, pinnacle of whatever was going to happen a month from now, a year from now, whatever. He sold too early, but every time he did, he preserved his profit. Most of you, if you've invested in the paper markets, you have... if you've generated some kind of a profit, you should have if you've been in it for any length of time. And you can sit there and say, well, it's going to keep on going and keep on going, but odds are that's not true. You take a dangerous risk, sell high, turn around and buy something low. Gold is low right now. Sell the paper, buy the gold. I mean, it's almost a spectacular opportunity. It's one thing to say, you sell high, okay. We're going to sell the stocks, whatever we've got invested in Dow Jones or in Standard & Poor's. Okay, let's sell that. What are you going to do with it? All right? What are you going to do with it? You're going to get yourself a bushel basket to keep your cash in, a safety deposit box, a bank account, whatever. That isn't, again, you're in paper, you're still in paper, you're in digits, you're vulnerable. If you're going to sell high, it only makes sense to take your profits and use them to buy low. Put it into something that will stand up to what may be, most people agree, is going to be a serious and significant correction. Mark Faber's talking about it. He's anticipating a 40% correction, and that is not a crisis. Not because, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. He's anticipating. He says, no, it's just normal part of business cycle. We should have already had a correction in these markets, a significant correction. And Faber's essentially said, yeah, it could go 40%. And this will not be a catastrophe. All right, this isn't, oh my God, the sky is falling. No, this is just a normal part of the business cycle that has been one way or another. It's been postponed, or maybe we should have had it a year ago or 2 years ago or whenever. But it's been postponed, but it won't be. If the real trouble, it would be worse than 40%. And when that's going to happen, who knows? I don't know. But Faber's, and Faber's not God. He's not giving us prophecy. But nevertheless, the man's a billionaire. The man should know what he's talking about. He should have a pretty good idea. He's warning. Stuff's going to hit the fan. Good idea. Get out of the way.
Yesterday, you had North Korea warned a United Nations committee. Mm-hmm. Yesterday. That a nuclear conflict may break out any moment.
Yeah, any moment.
Any moment.
Yeah. A nuclear conflict. Nuclear. This is North Korea warning that a nuclear, and this is a quote, may break out at any moment.
and they're warning the United Nations of this. The article says, "Canada, this is."
It's just not the warning, but they've acknowledged that they are full-fledged nuclear power. They are now a full-fledged nuclear power, and they possess the delivery means of various ranges, including the atomic bomb, the H-bomb, and the intercontinental ballistic rockets. Gold should have been up $300 today. Yeah. $300.
You know, and there's a point to this. The world is not paying attention if you can judge them by the markets. Mm-hmm. Right? They are writing off everything that happens. So not a problem. Everything's going to keep on going. I don't know. I can't give you prophecy and tell you what's really going to happen, but I can talk about probabilities that are reasonable, and you can sit back and say people aren't paying attention. What does that mean? It means they're going to be blindsided sooner or later. If they don't start paying attention, the moment is coming when all of a sudden, who knows, they're going to lose 40% of the value of their whatever they have invested in the paper markets. Could be. Can't tell you it's not God's prophecy, but I'm telling you, Faber thinks it's a problem, thinks it's likely. And it's not just hyperbole. You know, good chance he's right. I mean, a 20% correction, that was what the 1987 Black Monday was. It was a 20% correction. Nobody's even worried about a 20% correction. That was Black Monday back in 1987. Mm-hmm. Now there's, no problem, 20%, no big deal. Nobody's paying attention to 40%. Nobody's paying attention. Korea says there's, you know, a nuclear war could break out at any moment. In theory, that should have been enough to make gold jump dramatically. And nobody's paying attention. Believes him. It could be that they just all dismiss. But we dismiss everything. Everything is being dismissed. We talked about roughly $280 trillion in derivatives. Right? And being held in these clearinghouses, which are, I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember Billy Solestis back in Texas, back in the 1960s. He was getting loans from the banks. He had built these big tanks that you could use them to store crude oil, you could use them to store peanut oil. He'd built these huge tanks. I don't know, hundreds of thousands, maybe a million gallons. I don't know how much he built. I don't know what was in these tanks, but enormous tanks. And then he went to the bank and he told the bank that the tanks were full of peanut oil. And he used that as collateral to get great loans out of the banks. But eventually it turned up that, oops, the tanks were empty. He'd built the tanks and he didn't put anything in it. This is the same thing we're doing with these clearinghouses. People are building these clearinghouses. Oh, look, we have a clearinghouse. And we are insuring $280 trillion worth of... We are providing $280 trillion worth of derivatives. There's nothing in the clearinghouse. It's as empty as Billy Sol Estes's peanut oil tanks. Right? The whole thing is fraud. Billy Sol Estes eventually went to prison, if I recall correctly. He was a good buddy of Lyndon Baines Johnson, which wouldn't come as a surprise to anybody who's familiar with Texas politics. I mean, they were both a couple of, you know, wheelers and dealers. But you got to look at this. And somewhere along the line, you have to just sit back and say, I don't think they can continue to make the markets run higher and higher and higher. This thing is based on fraud. It's going to blow up. It's got to blow up. I mean, I believe that. I can't tell you it's God's truth, but how can it be anything else? It's based on fraud. They cannot pay the debts that they claim that they're backing, they're insuring. They can't do it. Sooner or later, this is... And if you're caught, when this goes, you know, you stand to lose a lot. Wouldn't be surprised if you lost half of what you've invested in the paper markets.
I think it's going to be worse. I think it's going to be worse than that.
Well, I'm just saying it won't be a surprise. You could be reasonable. You know, you could sit back and say, well, wait, let me do a little thinking here on my own.
Don't believe me. Don't believe Melody. Don't believe Wall Street. Don't believe anybody. Do a little thinking on your own. Say, well, let's see. They've got $280 trillion in derivatives. They've got the markets are being manipulated. Price of gold is being suppressed. Stock market is being supported on what? What? What reality is driving the stock market higher other than just optimism? That's all. We're not building a new, it's not like where I'm going to invest in this particular corporation. Not because it's got a new technology, not because it's built a new, more efficient production assembly line. None of that. We're just going to do it because, boy, it sure feels good. It's not a sensible way to conduct, to handle your investments. And yet the world seems determined to do that, be irrational. And they can. Nobody can stop them. But it tells you that if you're going to run with them, you're going to probably get butchered. The same as most of the people and institutions that are going to get butchered that are involved and that are supporting this stuff. And they're going to all be said, oh my gosh, how could this happen? How could it happen? The amazing thing about this is the question is not how can it happen? The question is how have they been able to prevent it from happening for the past several years? A lot of what we're talking about, it wouldn't have been a surprise if it happened in 2000 or thereabouts. It wouldn't have been a surprise if it happened. And they came close, 2007, 2008. At one point, Bernanke said that they were within hours of a complete meltdown. It didn't happen. Are we any further away today than we were then? I don't mean to say that we're within hours of a meltdown, but what I mean is our system is every bit as fragile as it was in 2007, 2008. A couple of black swan events, the next thing you know, we are within hours once again. Maybe they can pull it off, maybe they can't. But it's certainly, we're in deeper now than we were then. There's more debt, there's more derivatives. All of this, you look at this and you say, you know, maybe it's time to protect myself.
And you know, the United States and South Korea, they're holding joint naval drills this week. So, you know, and that was one of their problems with North Korea, and that's why they're making these comments. And so, yeah, anything could happen, Alan. We're just so very close, so very close. And we're so very close to a break.
Well, we have 15 seconds to go, Melody. So did you want to tap dance for the last 10 seconds or so, or shall I?
Tap dancing is not allowed on the program.
Da, 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 da.
But you know what? There's so many distractions out. Everybody, I mean, look, the media, all they talk about is this football deal. All they're talking about is Weinstein. And it's like, you know what? To me, I get the football. I get the NFL. I get the kneeling and all that. And people, you know. But you know what? They should be just as outraged with what is going on in Washington than watching a bunch of football players be disrespectful to the flag. If people were that outraged against Washington, maybe we wouldn't have the problems we have today.
But we have a bigger problem to deal
with
right now, Melody,
in
that we are into commercials.
We're already on break.
All right. We'll be back in a moment. If
we're probably already gone.
Are we already gone?
All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Come to Melody. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Now is a great time for those of you who just own gold bullion coins is to upgrade to $20 gold pieces pre-1933 mint state coins. I mean, the premiums are so low in the $20 gold pieces. Gold is hovering around this level. It's a great time to trade. There are no 1099s generated when you trade your bullion for $20 gold pieces. You can upgrade, and it really is a great time with these premiums as low as they are. 15-year lows, 7-year lows on some of these premiums. You can't beat it, and they will reverse. Everything goes back to, and they trade the way they're supposed to. Platinum will outperform palladium. They can have these little blips and various strange trading trends in a short period of time, but they all revert back and take their positions, and $20 gold pieces are no different. The $10 gold pieces are no different. We saw what the $10 gold pieces were doing. They were going up even though gold was going down. So good time to do that trade if you want to trade some of your bullion for some pre-33 mint state gold pieces, either the $20 gold pieces or the $10 gold pieces. So give me a call. I'd be more than happy to go over your portfolio with you at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Now, we talk a lot about what robots are going to be doing and the jobs that they're going to replace. We mainly talk about manufacturing. You know, we talk about retail. We talk about restaurants. And I'm not sure if we talked about truckers. Self-driving trucks. Sure, we talk about the little Uber cars and so forth, but I don't think we've ever visualized trucks. And this isn't that far off. You have a mining giant, Rio Tinto. They already use 45 240-ton driverless trucks to move iron ore into Australian mines, saying it's cheaper and safer than using human drivers. Mm-hmm. Last year, a company by the name of Otto, it's a self-driving truck company owned by Uber, successfully delivered 45,000 cans of Budweiser in a truck that drove the 130-odd miles from Fort Collins, Colorado to Colorado Springs. A semi-automated platoon of trucks crossed Europe last year in an experiment coordinated by Daimler, Iveco, Scania, Volvo. Otto, the company that's owned by Uber, is already promising to retrofit vehicles with driverless capabilities for just $30,000. The average trucker's wage is around $40,000.
Per year.
Yeah.
And once you retrofit that truck for $30,000, what's the operating cost per year?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not $30,000 per year. They're saying $30,000 retrofit.
We're just talking about wages. The potential saving to the freight transportation industry is estimated to be about $168 billion annually. The savings are expected to come from labor, $70 billion, fuel efficiency, $35 billion, productivity, $27 billion, and accidents, $36 billion. Therefore, including any estimates from non-truck freight modes like air and rail. So where does this leave all these millions, multiple millions of truckers? Their livelihoods are depending, to get behind the truck. Trucks haul more than 10 billion tons of freight each year.
You know, it's not impossible. It crosses my mind. I wouldn't bet on it. But it's not impossible that these autonomous trucks, these robot-driven trucks, in a lot of regards, may wind up being less expensive than transporting by rail. Right now, we use rail to move things long distances. I think if you eliminated the driver and you could keep these trucks running 24 hours a day,
That's right.
I think it's entire. I think it's possible. I wouldn't say it would happen for most of the industry, but much of the industry, a significant portion, they could start taking business away from the railroads and saying, look, yep, we can move your product from California to Texas because we run 24 hours a day. And it might be, and we'll deliver it door to door, maybe. You know, the one thing that bothers me about, I mean, I've watched trucks. I've never driven a semi, tractor, trailer, and the rest of that, but I watch them when I'm riding around town or whatever. And you see them get into some very peculiar situations where they have to make a turn. They're coming down the ramp. They got, there's the stoplight. They have to turn left. And maybe the road goes back. It's more than a 90-degree corner. It's 120 degrees. And they have to make that turn in a way where they inevitably run up over the curb, and they have problems. I don't know that the robots are going to be able to handle that. But I can easily see where you could put a robot in charge of moving a tractor trailer from Chicago, for example, to Dallas, and take them out of a central yard in Chicago that has all the trailers are there, the tractors are there, hook them up, pull them up onto the ramp, put them right on the expressway. Not driving through town, you understand, but just close to the expressway. You get your product up there close to the expressway, put it on that, get that hook up to that tractor trailer, and head down the road for Dallas. 24 hours a day. Nobody gets tired. Nobody has to stop to eat. You have to stop to gas up from time to time, but, you know, not a problem. Mainly, it's just on the highway. You get back to Dallas, you're not going to take it down the little side streets or whatever to dump it. You're going to drop it off at a central processing station, who knows, 5 miles outside of Dallas. And then maybe they want human drivers to go in and negotiate the traffic. Because there's things that happen when you're that you get into city traffic with the tractor trailer, and I just don't see how. I can't say it can't be done, but I'm going to be surprised if they can. The tractor trailer can be aware of where trucks are on the right and the cars are on the left and in front of them and back them. Maybe they can, but I don't see them necessarily moving through city traffic. I think maybe there you still have to use human drivers.
Yeah, but still, that isn't the point. I mean, you have to look at the impact that taking these truckers off the road. I mean, what about all the restaurants, all the truck stops, the drinks, the hotels? I mean, it's going to be a huge problem. A lot of job losses, not just the truckers. And this article talked about it's just not like the steel and the automotive industries. Trucking is not concentrated to just a few regions. It's the largest job in 29 states. I don't know why it says just 29 states, but it's just... I don't get why the article would say that. Maybe they think he was, maybe they're related to Obama. But anyway. And then they talk about what's going to happen to these people no longer working. And again, they come back to the income, the wealth income, the universal basic income. Yeah. And that's how they think that because there's going to be so much wealth that these companies make, they have to distribute something somehow to the people, and they think that's how this universal basic income.
I don't think there is going to be all that much extra wealth. I think what's going to happen is if I'm running a trucking company and you're running a trucking company and I install some robots and it reduces my costs, you are going to have to install robots also in your trucks and reduce your costs, and we're going to fight between the two of us to cut the costs down and down and down and down. I'm going to try to reduce, and in the end, it's not as if I'm going to make more money by using robots than I would have made as the owner of a company that uses people. The competition with other companies using robots will be so severe that I may not make as much money with the robots as I made without them. The competition, and what happens? It's not wealth that's going somewhere else. It's wealth that is not being produced. You know, I mean, the people aren't making any money because of the robots. They're making less money. They have less money to spend. That's going to tend to slow the economy down. Will it happen that way? Maybe, maybe not. But it seems possible to me. We can employ enough robots where you know, it'd be making 5 cents to haul a load from Chicago to Dallas.
The whole point is things don't trickle down to the consumer to where it's actually going to be competitive.
I'm not arguing that they won't.
I mean,
I'm saying there won't be anything to trickle.
Well,
we get done competing on the basis of robots.
We're going to be in a depression.
There won't be anything to trickle.
The only thing that's going to stop this from happening is we're going to be going into a depression anyway if we're looking at our wealth being wiped out of this country. So, yeah, there won't be any need for, you know, nobody will be making anything. But trucking is almost a $1 trillion industry. So, yeah, you get rid of all those drivers, it's going to save you a heck of a lot of money.
But the point is you save all that money. Who's going to buy whatever is being hauled in the truck?
That's true. I mean, you're going to have, you know, do the multiplier effect. That's the whole point. The economy is going to – people have to be taken care of somehow. People have to be – not taken care of, but they have to make money somehow.
Well, if they don't, they aren't going to have anything to buy. What are they going to buy?
These high-tech companies, I mean, they're pushing for that universal income. They're pushing for it.
I don't think it'll work. I think a fundamental reason behind a monetary system in the first place is to essentially show off to your neighbors how much money you're making. I'm better than you are because I have more money. I get paid more money per hour than you do, so I'm better than you are. I think there's a competitive nature in our species where we need to be able to, some guys, we need people that are making more money than we are and people making less money than we are. We need a continuum in there, a spectrum of incomes in order to differentiate. Well, I'm not as good as that guy, but I'm better than you are. All right? There's a pecking order that goes with this, and I think it's important. I suspect that it's important to the system. When we all have the same, how are we going to differentiate between who is the alpha male and who's the beta male? It's going to have to be on the basis of something other than money. And that something almost certainly is going to be, it's going to tend to be violence. Who's tougher? Who's stronger? Who's bigger? Who's faster?
I don't know
what's going to happen, but I'm just saying, I think the purpose of money is not to create equality. It might be to create equal opportunity, but not equal results. I think as a species, we need to know who's poorer than we are. We need to know who's richer than we are. It gives us a place, gives us a niche that we can occupy. When we're all the same, how do we tell the difference between all these people? And I think we need to be able to identify the difference between us. I don't think the universal basic income is going to work.
Well, it probably won't, but on the other hand, that's what they're striving for, and we are going to see changes in not only our country, but around the world. I mean, you're talking about massive amount of people that don't have jobs. Every weekend, there's a major tech company seems to announce some new development in automated trucking. Next month, Elon Musk, he's going to unveil an electric-powered semi that is likely to be semi-autonomous. A lot of these truckers are saying, we're not worried about it. There's no way that I don't think a robot could take my job. Maybe 20 years from now,
no,
maybe
it's
the
not
infrastructure.
20 years from now.
But no, I mean, there's more people that are saying, no, we're talking 5 years or so.
Oh,
maybe
you may
even
be talking less than that.
Less
we may be talking
this.
2-3 years before
yes.
this is almost a perfected technology.
Yep.
I won't say it'll be perfected that, but it'll be good enough. And I mean, what about pilots and airplanes?
Well,
should we feel more comfortable having a living pilot in the airplane, or should we feel more comfortable having a robot flying their 747?
I don't know.
The whole thing with the world is changing in ways where you look at it and just shake your head and say, oh, my gosh.
Like most of those planes are on autopilot most of the time.
Yeah, maybe
anyway.
So. Maybe so.
No,
we may have to just get some – we'll get a dummy. It'll look like we'll get a robot, all right? It'll look like a real pilot, but he just sits there and smiles from time to time and tells the passengers to please fasten your seatbelts. We're about to enter some turbulence or whatever.
You know, the trucking industry is the most regulated industry of all. The trucking business, yep, truckers are the most regulated of all.
And part of it is they have to sleep so many hours a day. They can only drive.
The way they have to log in and everything, yep, it is the most.
There won't be those limits on robots.
They know when they can, when they breathe, when they have to stop, when they have to go to the bathroom. Truckers make an average of $38,000 a year in 1980. If wages had kept pace with inflation, that would be over $114,000 today. But last year, the average wage was $41,000.
Mm-hmm.
38 to 41,000.
Yep. Mm. And it's not, and that is
I don't know, leaf in the breeze tells us what's going to happen for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to be clever, folks, if you want to prosper in the world.
So when everyone loves technology, just think about where we're headed and how is it going to affect you. It's going to affect
you. You know, when you really get down with a universal basic income, I think you're pretty much talking, do we really need to give people money? Why not just have one of the robot trucks pull up in front of your house and they'll set off your ration of food, your ration of clothes, your ration of whatever it is they have calculated you're entitled to right now? Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't even have to give you any money.
No, you'll have a computer chip. You can go to the store and, you know, if you need to spend anything, and, you know, that'll be the universal income. It'll be an implant. I mean, this is coming from the technology people. What do you think you don't think they have a system already in place?
I understand, but where is it going? You know, I mean, I'm looking at this and this looks to me as stupid as a debt-based monetary system. This is not going to end well.
No, it isn't.
They may start, oh, this is a brilliant idea. Yeah, watch and see. We'll see. I think this is going to lead to calamity, but who knows? We shall see. I can't tell you for sure. In the meantime, we're out of time, so we want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.